Leonardo da Vinci, the man who painted the Mona Lisa.
I had many careers during my life. I was a painter, an architect, an engineer, and a scientist. But I was also a dreamer who dreamed of the future. Some of the things I dreamed about only happened many years after my death. I was born on the 15th of April, 1452, in a village near the Italian town of Vinci. In those days, all the great cities of Italy were separate countries. Vinci belonged to the city of Florence. My father, Piero Frosino di Antonio da Vinci, was a lawyer in Florence. My mother, who was called Caterina, was a poor girl from the village. My father gave me a good education, and perhaps he wanted me to become a lawyer like him. However, my interest was in art. When I was 14, I became an apprentice of the artist Andrea del Verrocchio. I worked with him for 10 years while he taught me. He taught me the arts of painting and drawing, as well as metalwork and other arts. Soon I began to help my teacher with his paintings. I was a good student, and by the age of 20, I was a member of a group of people called the Guild of St. Luke. Some of the people in this group were artists, but others were doctors. The detailed drawings that artists made of parts of the human body, anatomical drawings, were important for doctors. So the two groups of people spent time together. I enjoyed making these scientific drawings, but I also made religious pictures. My patrons always wanted these, and I was good at drawing and painting people. I could easily draw things that were in front of me, like many other artists, but I could also draw things that didn't exist. Having this skill made me an inventor as well as an artist. All my life I used my imagination as well as my eyes and hands. I used them all to invent things as well as to make pictures. In 1481, the monks at Scopeto commissioned me to make a picture for them. I started work on the painting, which was called The Adoration of the Magi. But I didn't finish the job. I had to leave Florence suddenly. Why was this? I'd made a musical instrument from silver. It was a kind of harp, which looked like a horse's head. A prince called Lorenzo de' Medici heard about this instrument. Lorenzo was the ruler of the city at that time. He decided to send me to Milan with the instrument. He wanted to give it to his enemy, Ludovico Sforza, the ruler of Milan. He wanted Florence to make peace with Milan, and he hoped that his present could help this to happen. I did what Lorenzo wanted me to do, and for the next 17 years I spent most of my time working in Milan. It was there, in 1483, that I made the first of my two paintings of the Virgin of the Rocks. 2 years later, I painted The Lady with an Ermine. These paintings later became very famous. I also designed a kind of parachute at that time. In 1487, I made a drawing which is also very famous. I was very interested in proportions at that time, and I was interested in the work of Vitruvius. This ancient Roman architect had written a lot about the subject. He thought that there were rules about proportions in nature. And he thought that there were similar rules for the proportions between the different parts of buildings. I agreed with him. My drawing, which is now called The Vitruvian Man, shows a man's body. The arms and legs of the man are drawn in two different positions, and the man is contained by both a circle and a square. I thought that the proportions between the parts of a human body were interesting. I thought that they were like the proportions in art and architecture and in the rest of nature. I wrote my thoughts about this subject next to my drawing. Those years in Milan were very busy for me, and I worked on the cathedral in the city as well as on paintings for rich patrons. I also made a ceramic model of a horse called the Gran Cavallo. My idea was to make a very large copy of this model using the metal called bronze. It didn't happen. The bronze version was never made. Why? Unfortunately, the government of the city used the bronze to make large guns. They needed guns to defend Milan from its enemies. While I was in Milan, I heard from my mother. Her health wasn't good. She came to live with me in 1493, and she died 2 years later. I went on with my work. Between 1495 and 1498, I created a large mural in a church. The painting was called The Last Supper. But Milan was no longer a safe place, and in 1499, a French army, led by King Louis XII, invaded the city. I didn't stay to fight. I was 48 years old, and I wasn't well. I couldn't fight. I left Milan and I went to live in Venice. I was too old for fighting, but I could design buildings and machines for defense against enemies. The people of Venice soon asked me to design defenses for their beautiful city. So I became a military architect and engineer for a year. But after I finished that work, I didn't want to stay in Venice. I decided to move back to my home city, Florence. I enjoyed being in Florence again. I lived in a monastery, so I was able to paint in the monk's workshop. I used it as my studio. And there were so many beautiful buildings in the city. I loved walking through the streets and looking at the details of the architecture. But I also enjoyed looking at the natural world. I looked especially at the birds. They sang happily and flew happily through the air. If they can fly, why can't I do that? I asked myself. Why can't men and women fly too? That question stayed in my mind, and I made some quick drawings, some sketches. I wanted to invent a flying machine. So I made sketches of flying machines that had moving wings. They were only sketches. But one day, I told myself, people will be able to fly. I dreamed of flying, but all around me people were talking about war. In 1502, Cesare Borgia, the city's new leader, asked me to work for him. I designed weapons for him and military buildings. In those days, I had to spend a lot of time traveling. There were long journeys on bad roads. These journeys were very tiring. Between my travels, I tried to paint, but it was difficult to finish many pictures. In 1506, I decided to return again to Milan. Milan was now a safe place for me, and I had a lot of work to do there. It included many different projects, from church paintings to military designs. I often had to interrupt my artistic work while I did other jobs. Sometimes these interruptions were very long. For example, in 1503, I started painting the Mona Lisa, my most famous portrait, but I wasn't able to complete it until 1519. During this time, I was able to return to my medical studies. In 1510 and 1511, I cut up dead bodies and made detailed anatomical drawings of parts of them. I completed over 200 of these. During my life, I made about 2,500 drawings of different kinds. It's a strange fact that very many of these still exist, but fewer than 20 of my paintings can still be seen. Why is this? Have bad people destroyed them? No, they've disappeared, and it was my fault. I often made experiments with new kinds of paint. Some of my new paints weren't very good. Many of my paintings destroyed themselves because of my bad paints. In 1513, I moved again. This time I moved to Rome. The Pope asked me to work for him there, and I lived in Rome until 1516. Two famous artists, Raphael and Michelangelo, were also there at the time. We all worked on art projects for churches in the city. This work was interesting, but I had other plans too. I wanted to save people's lives. I wanted to cut up dead bodies and to study them. I believed that this kind of science, pathology, could help living people. But the Pope didn't agree with me. When he ordered me to stop my medical studies, I decided to leave Rome. I returned once more to Milan, which the French king, Francis I, now ruled. I met him, and I liked him. Francis was a clever young man with the mind of an artist, and we had conversations about many things. He offered me a house in Amboise, in the Loire region of France. The house was near his castle. Francis said that he wanted to learn from me. I accepted his offer, and I made the long journey across France. It was a good thing to do. In France, I was given everything that I needed for my work. Most days, the king walked to my house. We discussed my scientific ideas, and sometimes we discussed the king's political problems, too. I stayed in France until my death on the 2nd of May, 1519. I spent much of my time in France writing notes about my ideas. I wanted the scientists of the future to have them. But I made these notes in back-to-front writing, so that no one who came to my house could easily read them. I didn't want anyone to steal my work while I was alive. In fact, people weren't able to read these notes until 1651, when they were finally printed in a book. That was over 130 years after my death. In my notes, I wrote about my work and my life. During my life, I invented new ways of thinking. During my life, I asked new questions about our world and its people. During my life, I studied art, anatomy, architecture, geometry, geology, mathematics, and pathology. And I hoped for a better future.
Christopher Wren, the man who rebuilt London.
When the Great Fire of London destroyed most of the city in 1666, I was given the job of rebuilding it. My largest building in the city, St. Paul's Cathedral, is my memorial. I was born in Wiltshire, in England, on the 20th of October, 1632. My early life was difficult. My mother died when I was young, and soon after, the English Civil War began. This was a war between the supporters of King Charles I and a group of people called the Parliamentarians. The Parliamentarians believed that the country's parliament, not the king, must rule the country. And they didn't like the country's religion, the Church of England. They wanted a much simpler kind of religion. The leader of these Parliamentarians was a man called Oliver Cromwell. I was only 10 years old when the Civil War began. My father and my uncle Matthew were both important leaders in the Church of England. My family were royalists. We supported King Charles. Unfortunately, the Parliamentarians won the war, and the king was arrested. It was a dangerous time for royalists. My uncle Matthew was arrested too, and kept in prison for 18 years. My father and I went to live quietly with my sister and her husband at their home near Oxford. My sister had married a man called William Holder. He was a mathematician, and this was lucky for me. William helped me to understand the magic of numbers. He also taught me about astronomy, the science of the stars and the planets. I left my school when I was 14 years old, but I continued to study many kinds of science. With the help of a man called Dr. Scarborough, I made many anatomical drawings, drawings of parts of the human body. In 1649, I began to study at Wadham College, in the famous University of Oxford. That year, King Charles was finally killed by the Parliamentarians. They cut off his head in front of a large crowd of people. It was a time of great fear in the country. But I was safe in Oxford. I happily continued my scientific studies. I stayed in Oxford after I had earned my degree, and I continued to make many scientific experiments. I was especially interested in engineering projects and in anatomical experiments. But I also designed some measuring instruments for surveying. Surveying is the science of making the measurements that builders need to plan their buildings. At that time, many people tried to invent a way of finding a ship's position at sea. I thought hard about that problem too. And I also worked on military building projects. I was very interested in ways of defending cities and harbors. Several English universities noticed my work in all these subjects. In 1657, I became Professor of Astronomy at Gresham College, London. And 4 years later, I returned to Oxford University as Professor of Astronomy there. Although Oliver Cromwell still ruled the country, it was an exciting time for me. In 1660, I met with some other people who were interested in science, and we created the Royal Society. We wanted more people to know about science. The great scientist, Sir Isaac Newton, was one of our members. Why was our group a Royal Society? It was because England had a king again. Oliver Cromwell had died, and King Charles II, the son of Charles I, now ruled the country. The new king was interested in our work and in our society. For a few years I continued with my scientific work, especially in mathematics. Then in 1663, I began a new career. My uncle, who was now a bishop in the Church of England, asked me to design a building. He wanted to build a chapel at Pembroke College in Cambridge. The college was a part of Cambridge University. At that time, the job of professional architect didn't exist. Rich people who knew about mathematics designed their own houses. and large projects like churches were often designed by the workers who built them. I thought that architecture was a science as well as an art, and I thought that science was an important part of the design of buildings. I knew about science, so I decided to make the design for the chapel at Cambridge. And at the same time, I was commissioned to design a building for Oxford University too, the Sheldonian Theatre. I'd seen lots of old English buildings, and many of them were churches and chapels. They were all built in medieval styles, especially the Gothic style. However, when I was a student, I'd read On Architecture by Vitruvius, the Roman architect. This famous book told me about building in the classical style. This style was very different from the Gothic style, and it interested me very much. In 1664, I went to Rome itself. I was able to study the Theatre of Marcellus there, which helped me with the Oxford building. And when I visited Paris the next year, I was able to see some new French churches. They gave me lots of ideas. The Civil War had finished, but the English people still had many problems. In 1665, a terrible illness called the plague began to kill people in London. During the next year, the plague killed about one-sixth of all the people who lived in the city. London was a small, crowded city then, on the north side of the River Thames. I didn't live in London at that time, so I wasn't in much danger. And although the London plague was a terrible disaster, it was another disaster in the city, in September 1666, which completely changed my life. On the second day of the month, a terrible fire started in the city. It burned for several days, and it destroyed a very large number of buildings. Most of the houses in the city were built of wood, and they burned very quickly. But many of the stone churches were destroyed too. One of these was London's huge Gothic cathedral, St. Paul's. About two-thirds of the city's buildings disappeared in those few days. This terrible event is still called the Great Fire of London. The Great Fire was good for London's people in one way. It stopped the plague. And in another way, it was a good thing for me too. The city needed to be rebuilt, and the king gave me a special job to do. I was appointed to be the Commissioner for Rebuilding the City of London. I planned the city with help from several surveyors. We had to create a new London. Suddenly, I had a wonderful career as an architect, and for the rest of my life, architecture was my profession. I designed some of the most important buildings in the new city, and I planned the building of 51 churches, and I did much of the design work myself. This was a big job. I also became the surveyor for St. Paul's Cathedral. I had already planned some repairs to the old cathedral before the fire, but that cathedral had gone, and now I designed a new one. I designed a huge new building in the classical style, with a large dome. The work on the new St. Paul's began in 1675. The cathedral took 35 years to build, and fortunately, I lived to see the end of the work. In fact, I lived for 12 more years, until I was 90 years old. After the Great Fire, I controlled the work on many other buildings, some of them for the royal family. For this reason, King Charles made me a knight in 1673. I was now called Sir Christopher Wren. But in fact, I designed all kinds of buildings: palaces, theatres, museums, monuments, hospitals, and big houses, as well as churches. And I was a member of the English Parliament from 1685 to 1688, and from 1702 to 1705. When I died, on the 15th of February, 1723, I was buried in St. Paul's Cathedral. The Latin words on my tomb end with the sentence, Lector, si monumentum requiris, circum spice. This means, reader, if you want to see his memorial, look around you.
Antoni Gaudí, the man who built the Sagrada Familia.
People will always remember me because of the strange and wonderful buildings I designed in Barcelona. My huge basilica there is not finished, but it is one of the world's most famous churches. I was born on the 25th of June, 1852, in the town of Raus, in Catalonia. Catalonia is in Spain, near the border with France. My parents, Francesc and Antonia Gaudí, were people with strong religious beliefs, and they were happy to be Catalonians. I was their fifth child, and my full name was Antoni Plàcid Guillem Gaudí I Cornet. My childhood was unusual. I couldn't walk or run easily, because I had a rheumatic illness. My illness was painful, and there was no cure for it. My parents tried to help me with my problems, but I had to rest a lot. When I was 11 years old, I was able to attend the religious school in our town. I enjoyed my studies there. I was very interested in geometry, and I was very good at art. Soon, I realized that I wanted to become an architect. In 1868, we moved to Barcelona, the capital city of Catalonia. My father sold some of our family's land to pay for my higher education. Soon, I was able to study at the Architectural College in Barcelona. I didn't win any important prizes there. In fact, I was an average student. But that didn't worry me. My great interest was in the creative design of buildings, and some of my teachers didn't understand that. I was interested in building with stone and with bricks, but I was also interested in the extra things that made a building special. Metalwork, woodwork, painting on glass, and ceramics. While I was a student, I worked for several architects in our city. The one who taught me most was called Jean Martorell. He was my best teacher, and he was also a man who knew many important people in Barcelona. We became friends, and he helped me later in my life. When my time at the college was finished, I had to join the army, like all young men at that time. For 3 years, from 1875, I was a soldier. But I was ill for most of my military service, so I was able to continue my studies. Although I was a soldier, I had a strong belief in peace. But I also had strong beliefs in two other things: the rights of working people and the future of Catalonia. I didn't believe that the Spanish national government was listening to us. Our Catalonia needed more strong voices. When I started to design buildings, I did a lot of research. At that time, the 19th century architects who had started to use medieval styles again interested me most. I was especially interested in their use of the Gothic style. but I was also interested in Eastern design, and in the most recent kind of Spanish modernist architecture. This style also used ideas from Gothic architecture, but in a new way. I worked in all these styles. However, when I finally created my personal style, it was nature that inspired me. I used the shapes of plants as my models for the shapes of my buildings. People called it my organic style because of these plant shapes. My most famous works were built in this organic style. At the beginning of my career, the government of the city of Barcelona gave me a design job. Some of the streetlights on Plaza Real in the city were designed by me. But my first big architectural project was for the Mataró Workers' Cooperative. I designed some workers' houses, as well as a factory and some offices. The project wasn't completed, but people began to know about me. At about the same time, I designed some furniture which was shown at the Paris World Fair in 1878. There were fairs like this in several cities in the late 19th century. People came from all over the world to see the exhibitions which these cities arranged. In Paris that year, I met Eusebi Güell, a rich Catalonian businessman who became a good friend and an important client. Soon I was busy with buildings in and around Barcelona. Many assistants with different skills worked for me. I designed many buildings in my life, but I also designed the things that surrounded them. I liked to create gardens and parks round my buildings, and I liked to use local kinds of stone in these parks and gardens. In that way, I could join the building to the park and the park to the local geology. This part of an architect's work is called landscaping, and I believed that it was very important. The inside of a building was as important for me as the outside. For this reason, I always wanted to design the furniture which my clients put in my buildings. I believed that designing furniture was a big part of an architect's job. And I always tried to include the services, water pipes, gas pipes, electric wires, inside the walls of my building. I won the largest project of my life because Jean Martorell was my friend. This project was the design of a huge church. This Basilica y Temple Expiatore de la Sagrada Familia was also for Barcelona. Martorell knew that I was the right person for this job, and he told the Basilica's patrons about me. In 1883, I was asked to be the architect. I started work at once on this project, which was going to be the center of my life for as long as I lived. For 43 years, I worked on the church of the Sagrada Familia. For most of that time, it wasn't the whole of my life. I continued to work on many other architectural projects as well. My most important clients for these were Eusebi Güell and his family. They commissioned many buildings and designs from me, but there were lots of other clients too. In those years, I designed a large number of important buildings. Some of the most famous of these are the Palau Güell, the Bishop's Palace in Astorga, the Casa Mila, and the Casa de los Botines in León. The Casa de los Botines was a huge building with shops and offices and apartments above them. And in 1888, I had a commission which allowed more people from outside Spain to see my work. In that year, there was a world fair in Barcelona. My job was to design the Transatlantic Company's building for the fair. In the same year, work had begun on the Colonia Güell. This was a large project outside Barcelona. It included a factory with workers' houses. Several different architects designed parts of the project. After the factory and houses were finished, Eusebi Güell commissioned a design for a church from me. Building started, but the work was slow. Unfortunately, the church was never completed. In 1918, Eusebi died, and his sons stopped the building work. I worked on many small projects, as well as my big jobs. I could do this because I had a large team of assistants. I continued to work for private clients and companies, as well as for the Roman Catholic Church. I enjoyed working on these projects. But by 1910, all of my time was spent on the Sagrada Familia. Barcelona already had a cathedral. This new building, the Church of the Holy Family, was different. It was for the religious people of the city, but also for all religious people everywhere. In fact, I wanted it to be a church for people without religious beliefs, too. It had to be a building that tourists could come to look at. It had to be a building that its patrons could love. Soon, the Basilica became my second home. Some people said that it was my first home. In fact, in the last year of my life, I lived in a studio on the site of the church. People often said that the work on the Basilica was taking a very long time. "My client is not in a hurry," I replied. I meant that God was my client. My beliefs gave me a strong wish to continue with the work year after year. The design was very complicated. There were towers like huge, tall plants. There will finally be 18 of them. And the pillars inside the church were like a forest of strange trees. It was a complicated design. But I knew that I was making a very special building, and I wanted people to visit it from every part of the world. For me, the end came one evening in 1926. I was walking to a church to say my prayers. I was crossing the Gran Via, a wide road in Barcelona. I was thinking of my work, and I didn't see a tram coming towards me. The driver of the tram wasn't able to stop in time. For me, there was no time to say goodbye. But there was no need to say anything. Everyone in the workshops was busy. My team of builders, sculptors, and painters all knew my wishes. The metal workers knew what to do. The younger architects who helped me understood my design. For year after year, my work has continued. And one day, my basilica will be finished.
Pablo Picasso, the most famous painter of the 20th century.
When you ask people to name a 20th century artist, my name is the first name they think of. My most important works are now sold for amazing prices. I was born in Malaga, in Spain, on the 25th of October, 1881. My father, who was a professor at an art school, helped me to draw and paint from a very young age. He helped me, and he often criticized me too. But soon, I was very good at art. The teachers at the Barcelona School of Fine Arts thought that I was very good. At the age of 13, I became a student at that college. It was interesting to learn about other artists, but I didn't want to copy them. I knew that I wanted to create my own style. When I was 16, I went to study at the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in Madrid, the capital city of Spain. I didn't stay there very long. I was bored because the teachers wanted me to do the same work as everyone else. I decided to leave the academy. It was more useful to visit the Museo del Prado in Madrid. At the Prado, I studied the works of many important painters, especially works by El Greco. Next, I decided to travel to Paris, the capital city of France. I met lots of interesting people there. Max Jacob, a poet, writer, and painter, became my friend, and we decided to share an apartment. Life was hard for us. There wasn't much money, and there wasn't much food. But I did create a personal style. For several years, I painted many of my pictures with only blue and blue-green paints. In other ways, these paintings were simple pictures of their subjects. I returned to Madrid because I was very poor, and also because I'd become interested in politics. With Francisco Soler, I published Arte Joven, Young Art, an art magazine which had a political message. I drew the pictures, mainly political cartoons. I signed my pictures with one name, Picasso. Well, my real name was a very long one. Pablo Diego José Francisco de Paula Juan Nepomuceno María de los Remedios Cipriano de la Santísima Trinidad Ruiz y Picasso. It needs three lines to write it. A short name was better on my cartoons. Also, I didn't want important people in Spain to know too much about me. I wanted to change the system of government in my country, but it didn't happen. Perhaps the system changed me in a strange way. At about this time, a rich American became my patron. She was the famous writer Gertrude Stein. She'd moved to Paris, where she created an art collection with her brother Leo. When I returned to France, I met the Steins. At their home, there were Saturday evening meetings of people who were interested in the arts. At these meetings, I met several people who commissioned pictures from me. At about this time also, I was painting with rose-red colours. My blue period had finished, and my rose period had begun. And soon, other influences appeared in my work, ideas from other cultures. The influence of African art was especially strong. A famous example of my African style is my painting Les Damoiselles d'Avignon, The Young Ladies of Avignon. The Steins were helpful to me, but the most important help came from Daniel Henri Kahnweiler. He opened an art gallery in Paris in 1907. He loved my work and sold many of my paintings from his gallery. A few years later, I made a famous portrait of him. Soon I was able to earn a good income from my work. I painted all the time. I painted people, old people and young people, small people and large people, acrobats, dancers, and swimmers. I painted places, streets and restaurants, for example. And I painted many still life pictures, flowers, guitars, hats, violins, and wine bottles were all subjects for me. Work was mixed with pleasure because I often met my friends in cafes. One person was especially important to me. She was Fernande Olivier, who I met in 1904. She became my model. I made many paintings of her. And she became my dear friend. During my life, I had many muses like Fernande, young women who were both models and friends. Fernande was my most important muse until 1912. After that, Marcel Humbert became my most important model. By that time, I was painting in the style which was called Cubism. Cubism was a style that my friend Georges Braque and I created. We tried new ways of showing three-dimensional objects in two-dimensional pictures. Cubism allowed us to show things in several ways at the same time. Marcel Humbert appears in many of my first cubist works. But unfortunately, she died when she was 30 years old. In 1914, the First World War began, and the German army invaded France. The war brought horror to the people of Europe, and no art could show their pain. In 1917, while the war continued, I went to Rome. I went there to design some scenery and costumes for a ballet called Parade. This ballet was performed by the dancers of Sergei Diaghilev's famous Russian ballet company. My designs used cubist ideas, and some of my costumes were made of very thick paper. While I was in Rome, I met Olga Koklova, a beautiful Ukrainian dancer in Diaghilev's dance company. We fell in love, and on the 12th of July 1918, we were married. Our life together was never very peaceful. I painted and made designs, and she danced. When Olga said that she was going to have a baby, I realized that my life was going to change. In February 1921, our son Paolo was born. Perhaps Olga and I weren't ready to be parents. Certainly, my artist's way of life was very different from Olga's way of life. So, my wife and I lived separate lives. My next muse was Marie-Thérèse Valtet. From 1927 to 1936, I painted her very often. And after that, Dora Maar came into my life. Dora was a photographer, but she also became my model. Olga and Dora hated each other, so life wasn't easy for me. But Dora inspired many of my paintings of that time, and also some of the poems which I wrote. During 1935, my daughter Maya was born. Then, in the later 1930s, war came again to Europe, a civil war in Spain. A group of men, led by General Franco, decided to replace the Republican government by force. Many people were killed, and much of the country was destroyed in the fighting. In 1937, German aeroplanes bombed the Basque country, the part of Spain near France. They did this because Hitler, the German leader, wanted to support Franco. Many people were killed. The Republican government of Spain asked me to create a large picture to remind people of this horror. Guernica is the title that I gave it, because the village called Guernica was at the center of the destruction. Guernica became my most famous painting. The Spanish Civil War, which Franco won, was the beginning of a much bigger problem for Europe. In 1939, the Second World War began. Once again, good people were fighting for survival. France was soon invaded, but I decided to stay there in my second country. I didn't want to live in Franco's Spain, so I stayed in France, but I didn't exhibit any of my work. I met my next muse, Françoise Gillot in 1944, and in that year I also joined the French Communist Party. When peace finally returned to the world, I was in my 60s. I began to work in many different styles. Sometimes I recreated styles from earlier centuries in my personal style. After the war, I decided to live in the south of France. I became a father twice more, to Claude in 1947 and Paloma 2 years later. Paloma later became a well-known fashion designer. One day when I was 72 years old, I was working at the Madura Pottery. I designed and painted ceramic works there. That day, I was visited by Jacqueline Roch, who was very interested in my work. At the time, she was only 27 years old, but we became good friends. We became much closer after Olga died in 1955. Jacqueline became my second wife in 1961, when I was in my 80th year. Jacqueline brought youth and beauty to my life in my old age. Our marriage lasted until my death on the 26th of June, 1973. Jacqueline inspired more of my works than anyone else. During those last years, a wonderful thing happened. I was the first living artist to have an exhibition at the Louvre Museum in Paris, and there was time to think about my life in art. It was a rich life, both in art and in friendship.
Frida Kahlo, the woman who was famous for painting herself.
I'm famous today for my colorful paintings, especially my self-portraits, which are some of the most famous art from my country, Mexico. And I'm also famous because I was married to another important Mexican artist, Diego Rivera. I was born in Coyoacán, a small town near Mexico City, on the 6th of July, 1907. I was born in our family's house, La Casa Azul, the Blue House. My mother was my father's second wife. They had four daughters together, and I was their third child. But I had two half-sisters, as well as my own three sisters. This was because my father and his first wife, who died at a young age, had two daughters together. So I grew up with females all around me. My mother was a religious woman, and she always took us to church with her on Sundays. Sundays were peaceful days then, but some of my first memories are not peaceful ones. They are memories of the sound of guns. If we were in the street and we heard guns, my mother picked me up and quickly ran to our house. The year 1910 was when this started happening. As I grew up, I learned that we were living through the Mexican Revolution. Revolutionaries wanted to change our country's political system. The angry political arguments and the fighting lasted for many years. In those years, the fighting in the streets often made it difficult for us to live normally. For example, it wasn't easy to get food. Going to the shops was often too dangerous for us. When I was 6 years old, I became seriously ill, which added to our problems. First, I started to feel very tired. I had no energy to do anything. I had to stay at home and rest. But the illness soon became worse. Our doctor told my mother that I had poliomyelitis. "There's no cure for the illness," he said, "and your daughter will need a lot of help." My right leg became withered. It became thinner than the other one. Soon it was very weak. I couldn't move it easily. Other children noticed this and they laughed at me. But I decided not to let my illness interrupt my life. When I was able to go to school, I tried hard at everything. My weak leg didn't stop me playing sports and enjoying my life again. At my first school, the classes which I enjoyed most were the art and literature classes. The Mexican Revolution continued, and in 1914, the First World War started in Europe. That war lasted for 4 years, and as a result, there was less trade between Mexico and European countries. As a result, there were fewer things in the shops. But life went on, and in 1922, my hard work at my first school won me a place at the Escuela Nacional Preparatoria. The Escuela Nacional was one of the most important schools in Mexico City, and I was one of only 35 girls there. My main interest at that time was in medicine. I wanted to become a doctor. At the school, I found a lot of friends. My closest friend there was a young man called Alejandro Gomez Arias. And at that time, I first met the famous muralist, Diego Rivera. He was creating a mural called The Creation in a building which I visited. After I completed my time at the school, I wanted to explore the world. But in 1925, Alejandro and I were hurt in a serious accident. We were traveling in a bus, which was hit by a tram. I was hurt very badly. In fact, I was very close to death. I was unconscious when I was taken to a hospital. "Your leg is broken in 11 places," said the doctor when I finally woke. I looked at the bandages that covered my body, and I knew that the news was worse than the doctor had said. I soon learned that many other bones were broken too, but the injuries to my abdomen were the worst problem. As a result of those, I was never able to have children. In the next few weeks, I had the first of a large number of operations. I had 35 in all. And for 3 months, my body was covered in plaster. Very slowly, I learned to walk. But the pain was with me for the rest of my life. As a result, I decided not to become a doctor. I decided to become a painter instead. I couldn't leave the house very often, but I could paint at home. My mother had a special easel made for me so that I could paint while I was lying in bed. My father gave me paints and brushes, and I began to paint. The first picture which pleased me was a self-portrait, a painting of myself. I gave it to Alejandro. And that is how I began my journey as an artist. I completed 143 paintings during my career, and 55 of them were self-portraits. People often asked me why this was. "It's because I'm so often alone," I replied. "I'm the subject which I know best." And it's true that my life was lonely for a long time. but I had lots of time for thinking as well as for painting. At that time, though, I never painted my dreams. I didn't paint from my imagination. I only painted the reality of my life. At last, however, I was strong enough to go outdoors. The revolutionaries had won the war in Mexico, and people began to hope for a better life. And people began to take an interest in my paintings. Soon I met Diego Rivera again. I showed him some of my pictures and asked for his thoughts about them. I was surprised and pleased when he said, "You have skill." Diego gave me good advice, and after one of our meetings, he invited me to his studio. That was the start of a special relationship. In 1929, Diego and I decided to marry. My mother didn't agree with our decision. Why? Diego was 20 years older than me, and he wasn't a religious person. He didn't believe in any gods. My mother thought that there were too many differences between us. However, we shared many interests, and we were in love. I was sure that we were going to be happy together. We each had many other friends, and we spent time with them too. But we felt strong as a couple. Over the next few years, we often spent time together in the great American cities where Diego painted murals in important buildings. Diego and I believed in communism. We became friendly with the communist thinker Leon Trotsky after he left Russia. Trotsky had been an important politician in Moscow, but he hadn't agreed with Stalin, the Russian leader. After that, his life was always in danger. During his visit to us in Mexico, Trotsky and I became very close friends. But one terrible day, he was killed by a man who Stalin sent to Mexico. When I found a completely personal style as an artist, my paintings used ideas from old Mexican culture and religious art, and also from Native American culture. I started to use brighter colors. I worked in a style that has been called primitive, but my work also used the ideas of surrealism. Many people liked my work, and as a result, I had a successful exhibition in the USA during 1938. A visit to Paris in the following year led to another exhibition. And the best news of all was that the famous Louvre Museum bought one of my paintings. It was an exciting time, because Mexican art was becoming known across the world. But during that year, 1939, another world war began. And as I returned home, sailing across the Atlantic Ocean, I had another reason for worry. After 10 years, my marriage to Diego was failing. Perhaps we spent too much time apart. Perhaps we had too many other friends. Our marriage ended that year, but we still loved one another. And the next year, 1940, we decided to get married again. We continued to argue and to make each other unhappy, but that was part of our life together. It seemed that we needed the arguments. We needed to make each other unhappy. none of these problems stopped me from painting. I was busy during the 1940s. I painted a lot of pictures. And in 1943, I started teaching for the Mexican Education Ministry's School of Painting and Sculpture. Because my health wasn't very strong, I was able to teach my classes at home. People called my students Los Fridos. In 1952, I made some changes to my style of painting. I started work on a group of still life pictures. But the pain from my old injuries was getting worse. My doctors gave me drugs to help me with my pain. Unfortunately, these drugs had a bad effect on my body. As my health got worse, part of my right leg had to be cut off. I learned to walk with an artificial leg, but this took a long time. Once again, I had to be alone a lot, and my painting helped me to feel better about this. Painting helped me, but each day I had to fight for survival. Each little illness lasted longer. When I had a one-woman exhibition in Mexico City, I couldn't stand up. My bed was brought to the gallery where my pictures were hanging. I sat in bed while people looked at my work all around me. I knew that death was coming closer. I wanted to use my time to do my best work. I hoped that I succeeded. When I died, at my family home in Coyoacán on the 13th of July 1954, I was only 47 years old. But in the years since my death, my work has become famous across the world.